Welcome to episode 5 of My Life in Football in association with Square Media and Repos Retail Solutions. And in this episode, we get to speak to the manager of the mighty Banbury United, Andrew Wing, about his successes in his career from how he first started out, as usual, right the way up to managing Banbury United. Please enjoy it. It's a fantastic episode.
Well, welcome to another edition, of course, of My Life in Football. And, you know, today we are over the moon to be joined by somebody that has got a smile from ear to ear because of what's happened recently for him and his team, of course, Andy Wing. And Andy, we're over the moon to have you with us. And congratulations to you and to Banbury.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, cheers for having me on. Looking forward to it.
No problems at all. So I mean, Andy, as we normally start, me and Steve, you know, as you know, we start sort of, how did you sort of, the first question is always exactly the same. I mean, how did yourself get involved in football in the first place when you was a youngster?
I come from like a football family. Everyone's sort of mad Aston Villa fans. Obviously, up here in Birmingham, where both sides of the family are really big Villa fans. I think my dad, I was about 6 years old, he sort of was coaching a local team. I played for the under nines when I was about 6 years old. Obviously really enjoyed it. Moved on to kind of, there's a club called Arden Forest in Birmingham. They're quite well known around there as a big Sunday league football club. There's a lot of players. I mean, I think Lee Carsley and people that I played for them, Ben Turner. There's quite a lot from our school. Gary Birch, Neil Davis, who played for Aston Villa. So I went to a school called Cotchit Hill in Birmingham, and again, a lot of those players have come from that school. Had a really good footballing school. Played for Arden Forest as a youngster. I trialled at Birmingham City when I was about 10 years old. I think it was a centre of excellence. They folded about when I was about 10, 11.
I bet the family was pleased about that then, weren't they?
I know, yeah.
No, well, Villa fans.
luckily they folded at that time, so I didn't have a decision to make, to be fair. But it was at a time I was just, playing for them. Obviously, a professional football club. It was great, obviously, when you're 10 years old. Obviously, they folded. Then I went back to Arden Forest. I think I got seen when about 12, 13 years old. I think playing, the five-a-side tournaments you get in the summer. Played a lot of them and got scouted for Derby County and Coventry City at the same time. Fair play to my mum. She was, I think, I had training at Derby Monday and Wednesday night. I had training at Coventry City on Tuesday and Thursday night, and was doing that for quite a while, really. For months. I didn't get in at Derby, which was quite glad, really. I didn't really enjoy it. I was just going just because, as a professional football club, you know, that's your dream. That's what you want to do. But I really liked Coventry City. And luckily enough, I obviously got into Coventry about 12, 13 years old. And then I stayed there. Had some great years as a youngster at Coventry City. Then I got to 16 and I got released as a 16-year-old. It was a bolt out of the blue. I didn't really realise it, to be fair. The late Peter Whittingham was, he sadly passed away, the old Cardiff City player. Actually, what a player he was. He was in my same, he was in my Coventry City team. He went over to Aston Villa and his career went, from there. And I got released at the time. And it was a bit of bolt out of the blue. I think they brought a lot of Irish lads, 10, 11 Irish lads over. There's some big clubs in Ireland, Cherry Orchard. I don't know if you've heard of them, and a couple more. And there was only two or three English lads in that team. All these big Irish lads come over with big contracts, really. And we didn't get a look in. So obviously then, you go away, sort of tail between your legs a little bit, back to school. Back to the district team, kind of on the bench on a Saturday, because you've just come back and you've missed it for a few years. Went to
How does that affect your mindset though, as a youngster at 16? You know, you're playing for a professional team like, you know, Coventry City in, you know, in their youth ranks, and then all of a sudden one day, you know, almost like your dreams have almost, you know, had a door slammed on your dreams. I mean, how does a 16-year-old, you know, Andy sort of cope with that? I mean, what was that physically like? I know you just said you went back, you know, playing for the districts and the school teams.
Yeah, it was really tough. I felt, one, it was a bit of a bolt out of the blue. I didn't really expect it. I actually thought, you know, was good enough in that squad of players to get a scholarship. Obviously, we didn't know there was 10, 11 Irish lads coming over in our age group that pretty much took all the slots, really. And I felt I let people down. I felt I let, especially my mum, who'd been, mum and dad, who had, you know, travelled here, there and everywhere with me, and my dad as well, and you know, my poor sister who just gets dragged along, my younger sister who just got dragged along every weekend. You know, I felt I let them down, because, you know, it was their dream as well. Do you know what I mean? I know what parents go, it's probably even worse now, because clubs are picking them up at 6 years old, from 6 to 16. That's probably all they know. So it was really tough going back to school, like I said, back into sort of the school team, back into the district team. I always remember my first district game back. I was on the bench Saturday morning. It was just a real worrying time. You know, you got your GCSEs to think about and stuff as well. So all you really care about is football at that moment. You know, I'm back in the district team, I'm on the bench, and I think I come on second half and we won in the end. And then I was sort of chasing the dream, then trialing everywhere. I went to Notts County. I played right back, scored, I think I scored one, maybe two in a trial game from right back. Thought I had a great game. I'd really love to know the guy's name, but I can't remember it for some reason. But the guy, one of the coaches, pulled my mum to one side and just said, you know, what's he like at school? And, you know, she probably said, not that great, to be perfectly honest. But he said, well, you know, we should concentrate on schoolwork, really, other than football, because he probably, you know, he's not going to make it. So, like, you know, hearing things like that, it kind of does knock your confidence a little bit. But luckily, I went to sort of exit trials. They were at Lillishall at the time. So you sort of stay there for, you go like on a Thursday, you meet your team that you're going to, this was bad. It's a bit different now. I think there's a lot more. I think you're just thrown into it pretty much nowadays. But then it was, you met up the day before. You trained with your team, so you got to know your teammates a little bit. You stayed over at Lillishall, you know, which is a great experience in itself. And then the next day, obviously, scouts from all over the country come and watch you play. You played about 3 or 4 games, and. So, yeah, I played in there. I was really lucky. I wasn't renowned for my goal scoring, especially being being a right back, really. You know, I started my career sort of attacking midfielder at Coventry City. Then I slowly got back to I think Richard Money put me at right back. And it sort of went on from there, really. So I started right back. In the first minute, I scored a header, bullet header from a corner. Then I thought I played really well from then on in. I think that gave me a lot of confidence.
Do you find though that from sort of your era onwards, if you like, or perhaps just before you and afterwards and since, there is a much more opportunity for lads like yourself who were released than the one? I mean, I got released in 1972 by Swansea, and that was it. There was nothing. That was the end of it. You know, there was nowhere for me to go. Yeah. Fortunately, Ron Atkinson signed me for Kettering, but there was no exit trials. There was none of these, you know, opportunities that there seems to be these days. A lot better, isn't it? Or a lot more opportunity.
Absolutely, I think, you know, we can always be better. You know, I've worked in 18s football now. I've worked in 23s football since I retired, and you can definitely. It can be a lot better in aftercare of players, definitely. Yeah. You know, you kind of just discard them a little bit and it's like, you know, not our problem anymore. But I think with the sort of, you know, the sort of governing bodies or whoever it was, obviously set these LFE, I think they are now, the education programs, they set these sort of exit trials up, which is great. You know, and a lot of players do come back through the system from you know, those games. And it's a difficult environment, you know, you're playing 3 or 4, 5, 6 games or whatever in a couple of hours' time. And it's a really, one, it's hard to stand out when there's so many players. You know, it might not just be your day, you know, you might not be in a very good team, you know, all those type of factors come into it. But yes, they do get better opportunities. It's probably still not enough. But at least they are, you know, they are getting better with them opportunities. And, you know, luckily for me, I think we had Trevor Gould, Bobby Gould's brother, who was at Coventry at the time. He was watching that game as well. Obviously, after the exit trials, then I got a few. So you get a letter with who ticked your box. So then you contact them. And I said, I think I had like 10 or 11 clubs on that list, which was great. Had a couple of trials here and there. I think I ended up in Colchester. Jeff Harrop, you know, top guy. He basically brought me in. I stayed at here, him with his son, and they took me out for snooker, all that sort of stuff. I was going to sign for Colchester, and Trevor Gould phoned me from Coventry City at the time and just said, look, I think we've made a mistake. You know, would you come back and sign a scholarship back at Coventry City? You know, at the time, I'm 16 years old. I'm 3.5 hours away from home, unfamiliar to me. You know, Coventry's down the road from Birmingham, 30 minutes. You know, it was a no-brainer. I kind of knew everybody there. You know, unfortunately for Jeff and Colchester, were brilliant for me. They couldn't have done enough for me, but, you know, I just got closer to home. And luckily enough, I went back to Coventry City. Done my scholarship there. Obviously really, really tough. Had some really, really tough coaches, Scottish, angry coaches who, when you at the time, you just think, you know, they're hard as nails. You know, it's a real tough opening, a real tough school. But when you look back, those type of people are, you know, absolutely fantastic for you. You know, I lived at the training ground, Coventry City's training ground. It's still there now. All the rooms have gone now. I think, you know, players live in sort of houses with families and stuff now. We all lived together at the training ground. So just there's a canteen on the lower floor, and above that was like 12, 13 rooms. So all the Irish lads and English lads and who had to travel and stuff stayed in these dormitories. We had like a couple, Roy and Marie, who looked after us. We had jobs. We had, you know, chores to do. We had jobs, obviously, in the day for football. So boots, kit, all that sort of stuff, changing rooms. Overnight, we dishwasher, washing up, whatever it was, vacuuming. We had chores away from us. It was a really, really good grounding. Everyone's together. You know, we lived on top of each other in the middle of nowhere, really. Obviously, as you can tell, 15, 20 lads, you know, it's carnage at times. Obviously, especially 10 you know, Irish lads who only went home sort of once in 3 months, they must have been going stir crazy at times. You know, but it's a great laugh, a great sort of environment to be in. You know, and then when work starts at sort of 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, first team players come strolling in, like Richard Shaws, your Gary McAllisters, Robert Page, you know, go for Gary Breens. I can go through loads of them. You know, you had to knock on the door to go into a first team changing room. Their kit had to be right, their boots had to be spot on. And it's completely different now to what it was then. You know, I much prefer what it was back then, the grounding you got. You know, I was fortunate enough to be watching how these players worked day in, day out, what they did, what they ate, what time they come in. You know, I was living in their pockets pretty much. Obviously, you know, if you put a foot wrong, they'll tell you. Back then as well, we had under 17s and 19s who had like 40 scholars in the building, all crammed into one little changing room. I had, you know, I've ginger hair. I just wanted to stay well out the way as possible, not open my mouth, not put my foot in it, because I didn't want any stick. Yeah, obviously you got your people who've got big mouths, who are big characters, kind of running the dressing room. I was just in the corner, try and stay quiet, get my jobs done, train okay, and get to bed. That was always pretty much my day for 2 years as a scholar, really. But some great moments, obviously, as well. We had, you know, even though how tough it was, you know, we had some great moments. I mean, there's one story where there was a curfew, had to be in, but I think first year had to be in by 11 o'clock. Second year had to be in the lodge by 12 o'clock. Unfortunately, I'd gone home for the weekend, so, you know, I wasn't really involved in this, but I think 2-3 o'clock in the morning, no one was back. So one of the coaches, George Mackey, you know, Gordon Strachan's mate, Gary McAllister's mate as well, drove into Coventry City Centre with the Coventry City minibus, and waited outside the nightclub. And when all the lads come out of the nightclub, he rounded, like you just said on the before we joined this about the coach trip, where he rounded them up outside the nightclub. All the lads were, there's about 10, 15 lads, all I think Craig Pede, my assistant manager at Banbury United, was one of them, I think, to be fair. He was lined up against the wall, having a rollicking at 3 o'clock on a Saturday morning. Obviously, there's people coming out of nightclubs laughing, you know, taking the mickey out of these lads. But that's kind of the grounding we got, really. Do you know what I mean? Even when it's out of hours of football, so to speak, you're not at the training ground, you know, you're representing a football club, you're representing yourselves, the coaches. And obviously they got put back on the minibus and back to the lodge, and obviously got a dressing down, I think, from Gary McAllister, who was on the Monday morning, telling us how to live our lives right and all that sort of stuff. But it was a fantastic grounding, and luckily I made my debut then for Coventry City in the Championship when I was 18. I think it was 2003, you know, which was a sort of a great, you know, I'd only played a couple, but obviously reserve games as well. I had some really good, I'd only played about two reserve games. Always remember one was against Tottenham, and they had like sort of Dean Richards, centre-half, Christian Ziga, left-back, some, you know, proper players in a reserve team, not a 23s team when you're playing against, you know, people the same age or younger. You're playing against proper men who have played hundreds and hundreds of games at the stadium. So you get more of that first team feel as well.
Do you think that's something else that's changed, that, and probably not always for the better, where, you know, going back, in, you know, not so many years ago, like you say, you had reserve sides where you did come across your top men coming back from injury or whatever it might be. I mean, nowadays, like you say, you're playing all against or with your same ages, aren't you now? Your 18s, your 21s, your 23s.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, especially recently, I think I've seen a lot of people talking. I've seen a lot of debates. I've seen a lot of sort of articles where now they're starting to realise. Well, I don't know why it's taking so long. That, you know, it's probably better for young lads to go out and experience men's football, whether that's from, you know, into you know, Southern League Premier League or lower, Step 4, Step 5. You know, whether that's if you're, you know, into sort of league clubs, you're coming into the National League. You know, I think there's a massive cry now for players to go out and get that experience. You know, we've got a young lad on loan from Banbury United, and he will go on. He's absolutely outstanding. James Golding, 17 years old. You know, but he's got a lot to learn, but he's absolutely, he will play sort of League One, Championship. Hopefully he can go further, you know, with Oxford United and beyond. You know, and it's a great grounding for him. He's had a lot to learn. You know, he's 17, but he's 6'4". You know, would he play against two strikers, you know, in an under-18s or a 23s team? You know, a lot of them play one up front or whatever, but he's, you know, he's learning different traits, you know, from that, instead of a kind of like for like, You know, if you watch 123's game, you've probably seen them all that last season. They're all pretty similar. You know, and I think there's a lot of I've read a lot lately where they are starting now to sort of, you know, use sort of, you know, lower league, non-league clubs, whatever it is, now to get that experience. And I think it's massive, not just for footballing ability. I think just everything about it is sort of, you know, the grounding, your sort of the environments. Obviously, you want to try and create the right environment for players. But, you know, that obviously winning, you know, 3 points matters, 1 point matters, whatever it is, going away to grounds where you've got to get a bus or whatever it is. I think that grounding is definitely helps them massively.
Yeah, I mean we've got I'm with Raunds Town. It used to be a Southern League club in not so distant past, but we've got lads from Kettering Town who are not in their first team squad who are playing with us in our first team. You know, so they're getting a good grounding at step five. You know, which is like you say is better than playing in their own under 18 or under 21 level.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you get a lot of college teams and stuff like that now. But that experience of being in a league club, you know, whatever level it is, you know, that you know, some really, really good people, you know, in non-league. And, it, you know, I think it's a great grounding for them. You know, higher, you know, obviously, yeah, sort of league clubs, you know, obviously a lot of National League now is professional anyway. You look, even, you know, there's a lot, you know, you go down step four, step five, you know, there's some fantastic teams, some fantastic setups. You know, I don't think, you know, I think there's, you know, 15, 20, whatever years ago, it's probably, you know, non-league was, you know, nothing really compared to what it is now. You know, a lot of people are so surprised when they go down to football clubs and how well they're run, the facilities they've got. You know, there's football people all in that. So I think now people are, you know, especially 23 teams are starting to learn. You know, I've had, you know, managers, 23 managers already, you know, want to send players out on loan to us, you know, in the northern sort of sections of the league, because they know it's more beneficial for them than 23's football, and they think it's better to bridge that gap that way than going from 23's football straight into first team. So hopefully more clubs will go down that route, and you know, obviously that'll be great then for non-league as well and lower league clubs, you know, to utilize those players.
I mean, as you said, though, you know, Andy, I mean, first game, you know, for Coventry was in Division One against Burnley in 2003. I mean, that must have been an eye-opener. Talking about going in against blokes, I mean, you couldn't get much sort of fiercer than someone like a Burnley to play your first game against.
No, I think Gareth Taylor was their number nine. I think he scored. I think he's the Manchester City women's manager now. And he was a big guy, proper, you know, old style sort of centre forward. It's funny that, I mean, I got put in the squad on the Friday, didn't expect to be involved at all. I don't know how many was in the squad at all, but, you know, so I just done my normal thing. I went to the local social club with my old man. You know, I weren't drinking, but I had, you know, I just had a few points of coke or whatever it was. Just done my normal things. You know, I didn't expect to sort of play. Then half one on the next day, like I'm starting, you know, pretty much out of the blue. I'd only barely trained with the first team really, and just got through him with the deep end.
Who was the first team manager then?
Gary McAllister was.
Oh, Gary McAllister was.
Yeah. So, and he was playing as well at the time. He was player manager. So I had the best of both worlds. He was, you know, a fantastic manager, fantastic coach, and he was still playing. He was unbelievable playing as well. So for me to sort of coming, you know, my debut and him playing as well, it was great. I had like Richard Shaw next to me. You know, what a guy he is. You know, there was so much experience in and around the club, the team then. You know, I just felt at ease. I just, for some reason, I don't know if it was age or what, especially then, I just felt I didn't really have much to lose. I just went in and played the game like I would normally play a game. And then luckily, you know, I kind of had a half decent career from then on in, really. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed my time.
Was that, had they moved then, or are they still at Highfield?
So, So that was at Highfield Road.
There's another question. I mean, I'll come to that question in a second because you are famous with Coventry City fans, and there's a reason for that. We'll go into that in a second. But I mean, as a player though, and as a young player, I mean, when you get to the following season and your shirt number comes from 40 and goes down to number 2, does that get to a situation where you then think to yourself, well, you know, I'm a starter almost every week when you get to that number of being the sort of the traditional right back number of number 2?
Yeah, so that's great. I think my first shirt was 40, was it? Around about then. But there was about 15 games left in the season then as well. So I played my debut and then I didn't play the next game. You know, he took me out of it, you know, and you know, that was just great man management from McAllister at the time. And then I don't know why or what the game was at the time. Then he brought me back in for another game. I think played Grimsby away. We won 2-0. I always remember I must have took someone on. I think it was Jones or something like that. And I just remember him whispering to me, yeah, do that again and I will absolutely volley you into that stand. and I didn't do that again. So I think every time I got the ball there, I just passed it off. We won that game. And then we played Sheffield Wednesday away at Hillsborough, my third or fourth game in. We lost 5-1. You know, real tough Hillsborough, real big crowd. Shefki Cook, I think, scored that trick. Done the old swan dive. And then I think I got come off like 60, 70 minutes. It was a real, real torrid, tough evening. So then I got brought out the next game, went back in. We played Sunderland away at the Stadium of Light. Julio Arca was giving me absolute torrid for about 20 minutes. I think McAllister brought me off. So just little things. I think that 15-game spell was brilliant for me because it was, you've got into the first team, but he kind of took it away from me as well and kind of drip feeding me in, which is brilliant because it was a great experience. You know, you see some players now where, you know, because you're going to be inconsistent at that age, you know, and they continue playing and you know, they kind of get vilified for it, but it's not really their fault. And managers don't seem to realize they need to be brought out the firing line a little bit and that sort of. So I thought Gary McAllister was brilliant for me in that. And then like you said, at the end of the season, then I've gone from 40, whatever it was, to number 2. You know, there's some big players at the time in and around that. Obviously, the Coventry just come down from the Premier League at that time. So there was still quite a lot of players from that Premier League era hanging around. You know, and now I've got that number 2 shirt. So it was a great feeling. You know, and I spent some, you know, 2 or 3 more years at the football club.
First goal, remember it well, do you? Against Nottingham Forest?
Yeah, I do, yeah. I think Michael Dawson was playing centre-half. I can remember him playing. I think it was a left foot. We were 1-0 down at half-time. It was just after half-time. I've cut in on my left foot on the edge of the box. I'm not too sure why I was there. I don't know how what's happened for me to be there. I've hit it with a left foot in the bottom corner. I think I've ran into the crowd and got booked, but you know, I just wasn't bothered at that time. Well, I do remember that type of game as well. We lost 3-1 in the end to Nottingham Forest, and I was walking off the pitch and I'm like going hype to the crowd, like waving to my mum and dad. I'm like, yeah, like well, that because I've scored. And I got a phone call straight after the game saying, you know, you just lost 3-1. Do not celebrate. I know you scored. I know you're happy. It's your first goal, but whatever, you don't celebrate at all because, you know, if your manager sees that, you're going to get absolutely battered. So, you know, I remember from, you know, I didn't score that many, to be fair, from then on in, but, you know, just ran it in a little bit. But a great feeling to score your first goal, definitely.
What I've got in front of us is during the season, you made more first appearances and was rewarded with a 4-year contract and praise from then manager Eric Black.
Yeah, so I'm unfortunately at the time, I think Gary McAllister, his wife, I think died of cancer, which was a crying shame for the football club. Obviously, you know, we were absolutely devastated because he was, you know, he was brilliant for us. He was. Especially for me, I remember. I don't know if it was that contract or the one before. I didn't have an agent or anything. You know, Gary McAllister. So me and my mom just went down to the to Highfield Road to the ground. Gary McAllister was there, had a contract, and he basically just said to my mum, like, I'll look after him. You know, this is a contract, what I feel like he feels right for me at that particular time. And me and my mum were like, you know, whatever you say, we will sign. So, you know, my first contract was all down to him, what he put on the table. You know, because I trusted him, because he was such a great guy, player, manager, whatever it was. That was massive for me. That was, I think, you know, I don't think it helped me then, sort of pushing on. I got a 4-year contract. Eric Black was brilliant, to be fair to him. Obviously, he was his assistant at the time. But then, obviously, I don't know if we're struggling a little bit. He brought some of his, like, more experienced players in. You know, I'm only 18, 19 at the time. So I was kind of in and out from then. And then we had a few more managers, you know, which obviously then new managers come in. They want to bring their own players in. You know, some of them don't really trust the younger players. You know, so it's a little bit frustrating from them. I still, you know, played over 100 games at Coventry City, you know, in the Championship, which is great. But I didn't feel that, you know, I reached my full potential then. You know, especially because of the change of managers and then bringing their own players in, really, which was quite frustrating.
Well, of course, you are super famous with Coventry fans for a reason. I mean, I've got it written down here in front of me what that reason is. And I mean, tell everybody what that reason is and what was it like on that day?
Yeah, so, you know, I was quite fortunate enough to score the last goal at Highfield Road. You know, it's a fantastic, iconic stadium, proper old school stadium. You know, it only goes to show what they've moved into now was a bit of a disaster for the last few years when they had to move to Birmingham City and play there. But at the time, it was, you know, an iconic stadium. You know, a lot, you know, they played a lot in the sort of the top division there as well. We were struggling. We're near the bottom of the league at the time, and there's only two, obviously, now we had an away game to finish off the season. We needed to win, really, to stave off relegation. We were quite close to the bottom three at the time. So it was a big day for us just to go and win the game. But the atmosphere was unbelievable that day. The sun, it was like baking hot. You know, everyone was in the ground 2 hours before. So it was like when you come out for the warm-up, usually, you know, you get your dribs and drabs there and the odd claps here and there. You know, at this day, it was pretty much full house at, you know, at 2 o'clock, whatever it was. So you come out for warm-up, it was noisy, you know, the fans were there. It was just a real, real good day. All the obviously legends were there. Jimmy Hill was there singing, you know, obviously the Coventry City songs, all that sort of stuff going on. You know, obviously we had, I was on the bench that day. You know, I just remember Adrian Heath getting all the players into a little huddle. And, you know, if you don't enjoy days like today, you know, you shouldn't really be in the game, to be perfectly honest. You know, it was just a fantastic day. And then the lads started off on fire. I think it was like 4-1 up at half time. You know, we were brilliant. I think we were 5-2 up, I think, at the time. 25 minutes to go. I get the nod to come on. I think just to shore it up a little bit. So he put me right wing. Obviously, Richard Duffy was playing right back. So he just put me one in front of him, just to kind of shore it up a little bit. So two fullbacks down on one side. And then I think we had a throw in. It was through to me. The defender nipped in. So, you know, I didn't touch it. And then it's gone back through our back line. I think Steve Staunton out to Marcus Hall. Marcus Hall is kind of, you know, I think I see this goal nearly every day. That's why it's like in my head so vividly. Into sort of Dele Adebola or Stern John, and then it gets headed across by two centre halves, and it just felt, I was just running in on the edge of the box. It just fell to me sort of like on a half volley, pretty much just closed my eyes and hit it as hard as I could, I think, to be honest. And you know, the slightest nick and it's gone into the top corner, which is then pandemonium. Obviously, I didn't really know what to do. I've ran round the goal and beyond the goal. you know, the fans trying to clap you. It was just an unbelievable feeling. Just to score a goal. It was 6-2. We'd won the game pretty comfortably at that point. But, you know, I just went absolutely mental.
Well, it says here that you were the recipient of the Goal of the Season award and a special award for the historic goal. His running five high, running high five celebration became the moment that almost all Coventry fans remember him for.
Yeah, it was. I was very fortunate then to sort of get Goal of the Season for that. I think just because it was such an iconic goal at the time, last goal at Ifield Road. You know, weren't a bad one. You know, it took a slight deflection, but it was going in anyway, to be fair. Decent celebration. Then obviously at the end of the game, you know, when you're coming out, I didn't even think anything of it. And then Richard Shaw just gone, you know, you've just scored the last goal, you know, at the ground kind of thing. And I was like, you know, at the time I didn't really, I think I had a house party that night. I just moved into my new house. And I just remember playing it on repeat. There's loads of people here. And I just forget the music. Just watch this on repeat on Sky Sports News, I think, all night on a loop. But, yeah, it was a great day. Really, really great day. You know, one for the football club. We were safe from relegation. We were winning that game. And you know, I'm just really fortunate that I was you know, in the right place at the right time and scored that goal, really.
And then, according to this, it says that you went on loan to Brighton. And then eventually, when released at Coventry, signed for Brighton in 2007.
Yeah, yes. I went on loan to Brighton. It was a strange one because I was in the first team at Coventry. I played against, I think we played Plymouth on the Saturday, drew 1-1. It was the international break the week after, so we didn't have a game. We trained 3 or 4 days, and then on the Thursday or Friday, was going to have the weekend off. And I Dean White from Brighton Hove Albion called me and said, we've been told that you're available for loan. Do you want to come down here on loan? I was like, hang on a minute, I don't know anything about this. I've played last week. Do you know what I mean? I've been playing quite regular. Then I went and obviously went and seen the manager. I think it was Mickey Adams at the time, and he said, "Yeah, obviously, you know, we want you to go out on loan." I said, "That's fair enough. That's fine." I'd barely left Birmingham, sort of Solihull area, Coventry area, my whole life really. So to move down to Brighton was quite an eye opener for me. I was straight on the seafront in a hotel there. Absolutely, you know, loved it. You know, what a place, unbelievable place. I've met friends for life down there. Really enjoyed my time. Went on loan there to the end of the, for 2 or 3 months of that season. Got recalled. I think Ian Dowie come in at that point at Coventry City. My contract was up at the end of the season. He basically just said, like, you know, obviously, you know, you've had a great stint here. I think it might be time for you to move on, which is fine. Obviously, I didn't want to leave, but, you know, that was fine. And then in the summer, luckily enough, obviously, because I had a really good loan spell with Brighton, I signed there permanently in that summer. You know, again, played probably over 100 games for Brighton in League One. You know, I had some fantastic times down there as well. Plonked myself right by the sea. You know, in Birmingham, you know, there's a canal around the corner. That's about it. So for me, just being around the seaside was unbelievable. My family loved it. You know, they love coming down every weekend. You know, I really, really, really enjoyed my time there. As I said, I've met some great friends down there. So, you know, I still go down there quite regularly now to see those type of people. Really, really good football club. Fantastic place to be. Had some really good times there. The first couple of years were brilliant. Really, really enjoyed it. Then had a bit of a stink. First season was I think we just finished just below the playoffs. Dean Wilkins, outstanding.
Andy, can I ask you about something on here? Because it's one of those sort of things when you read Wikipedia and it's like, and you sort of do a bit of research and stuff and you read certain things, you think, why would somebody put that in there? But it's literally, says here, his first game after signing for the club on a permanent basis came in an opening game of the season, a 2-1 defeat to Crewe. Then it says he was sent off 2 weeks later after a second bookable offence in a 2-0 loss to Tranmere Rovers. I mean, why would somebody put that in there?
I remember them both of them games quite well, to be fair. The crew, I think, went 1-0 up. Lost 2-1. Tranmere game. Yeah, I remember that quite well. I tried to get it rescinded, and basically because there was two or three players coming at the same time, and I basically said it wasn't me. I shouldn't have got booked. It should have been the other lad, but yeah, it didn't get rescinded. And that was my first sending off of my career. I think that was two bookable offences. That was a bad day at the office. That one, yeah. But Wikipedia, to be honest.
I mean, one of the things I should ask you about before you go back into your story and see how disappointed you may have been or may not have been. I mean, it says here. And whether this is actually true, because you never know with Wikipedia. It says, with his contract expiring at the end of 2008-2009 season, Andy attracted interest from Walsall and Leeds United around the same time he was offered a new contract after his move to Leeds stalled. How disappointing was that to maybe get a chance to play at somewhere as iconic as Leeds United?
To be fair, I nearly joined Leeds twice. I think it might have been that season where I went to Brighton. I don't think I was ever really close. During that off season, to be fair, I had a phone. I was away in some Marbella or somewhere like that. You know, I can't even afford to go camping down the road at the minute. But back then, it was sort of Marbella or whatever it was. And I had a phone call from my agent. He went, are you lying down? I think I must have been hungover or something at the time. So I was still in bed. And he goes, Birmingham City are interested in what you think. And I was like, hang on, I've got, this is a big one here because I'm a massive Aston Villa fan. Obviously, all my family is. What do you think? I think because Eric Black had recently gone there. He was the assistant manager to Steve Bruce at the time. And I think I was really close. I think they bought Stephen Kelly from Tottenham Hotspur in the end, and I was kind of second choice if that one didn't go through. So luckily enough, I didn't have to make that choice. So that was a close one. But the Leeds one in that summer didn't really materialise, I don't think. But 2 years down the line, that summer I signed a 2-year contract with Brighton. After the 2 years, I've done really well. I think I got player of the season at Brighton in my second season. And they offered me a contract sort of near the end of the season, really. So I was allowed, I could speak to anyone else. And Leeds came in for me that season. And what killed me really was I got sent off. I only got sent off, I think, three times in my career. And that I played 47, 48 games in that season. I think I was on 11 yellow cards and I've been sent off once for 2 yellow cards. A stupid thing to do. I think we're 3-1 up in. There was a 90th minute. I didn't get a decision and I've slammed the ball down and got a second yellow card. And I was first choice basically to move to Leeds. And like you said, an iconic, massive club. I've played there a few times. It's one of the clubs where you walk out the tunnel and you just know, that, when that sort of marching on together or that, the music comes on, that you're at a proper, proper big club here. And, obviously I was really interested at the time, playing for Leeds, that would have been, even though they're a League One, but you always felt, they're on the up, they were going to get promoted at some stage. But they didn't take me on because they thought, my sort of disciplining record weren't great. I'd got booked 11 times that season, but I'd played 48 games. So I'm only getting booked once in 4 or 5 games. And as a right back, I didn't think that was too bad, to be perfectly honest. Maybe that sort of that sending off killed me a little bit towards the end of it was like 3 or 4 games to go at the end of the season. Might have killed me a little bit that move. Obviously, which is a little bit frustrating at the time, but I signed another 2 years. And then that 2 years really didn't materialise, really. The previous 2 years were brilliant. We just finished outside the playoffs in the first year. Second year worked great, as in we needed, I think we stayed up on the last game of the season. But I got player of the season. I played pretty much every game. I was We used 40-odd players that season. We had a turnover of players and managers. It was unbelievable. But I was one of the mainstays in that team and got player of the season. That earned me my contract and nearly earned me a move elsewhere. And then the next 2 years, I had during pre-season, I'd done my groin. I had to have a hernia operation, which was my second hernia operation I'd had. And I missed 3 or 4 months at the start of the season. We started off poorly. Then Gus Poyet come in. I was just coming back from that injury. I'd been 3 or 4 months. I barely played a game, really, and I was thrown into the team. I think we had Southampton away on TV on a Sunday afternoon. It must have been an international break, so there was no Premier League games on. So we were the main game on Sunday sort of afternoon at 4:30 away at Southampton. Won 3-1, had a great game. I felt it. I got through that game on adrenaline, really, just because, it was a big game, sort of local derby-ish. And we had a game on a Tuesday. I think that was against, I think it was Wickham or something in the Johnson's Paint Trophy. I should never have played in that game. I should have played that sort of Sunday game and had the sort of that kind of midweek game off. I played in that game. And then we had Leeds at home on the Saturday. And even in the warm-up, I felt I am struggling here. Like I'm sore. Just warming up was a chore. We ended up, I played because, when you get back in the team, the one thing I didn't want to do is just say, look, I'm not right for this game. I need a rest. I'd have just thought, he'd think the worst of me. Probably wouldn't play me again. So I just grind it out. We ended up losing 3-0. I think I took after about 60 minutes. Weren't a great game for me or for us. Probably shouldn't have played, but I did. Then we had Southampton near top of the league, Leeds United top of the league on the Tuesday. So in the space of 10 days, I've played Southampton, Leeds and Norwich on the Tuesday night away. Again, I think on the Monday or Tuesday, and sort of when we've gone to a hotel and we're having a walk before the game, I think because Poyet said to me, "Well, how are you feeling?" And I, stupidly, as I've said, I'm fine. I'll crack on. We ended up losing 4-1 to Norwich that game. After that Southampton game, the adrenaline that got me through the game, I was really struggling the next 3 games, and it was just nowhere near the level. And then that was it for me. I was still injured pretty much in those 3 games, weren't fit enough. And then that was the end for me pretty much, which was devastating really, because I've had a couple of great years. I love the football club, really enjoying my time down there. New manager comes in, he's seen me for 3 games. One of them was really, really good. Adrenaline, he got me through the game. The other 2 games, I was just nowhere near fit enough. For them type of games. And then that was pretty much it for me. Then I still had another year and a half left, I think. Barely played that season when I loaned to Chesterfield at the time.
I mean, I say you had a couple of loan spells. You went to Chesterfield, but then you played for the biggest club that you could play for in your career. So then you moved to the mighty O's. After that. So, I mean, what was that like playing for Leyton Orient? I know it was only like for a couple of years, but I mean, it was, it's one of the clubs that I used to go to with my old man. And, you played under, for me, probably the best Orient boss that they've had in present, over the last few years in Russell Slade as well. I mean, what was that like?
To be fair, the Chesterfield one weren't great at all. I think I played 15, was second in the league, ended up outside the playoffs. It was a bit of a disaster, really. And John Sheridan was an absolute character, but I learned a lot there. And that was the end of that season. The next season was same again, in and out of the Brighton team. I was never, like we talked about the sort of, I was number 2 at the time. We talked about this earlier, and I got a phone call from Charlie Oatway, this sort of one of the first team coaches. So Gus Poyet didn't even pick up the phone really and explain anything to me. They just said, "We're going to take the number 2 shirt off you in the summer." So, leading up to pre-season, I already know that, my time is pretty much done at Brighton. I think it got into the kind of done pre-season. We've got into the season, weren't getting lucky. I need to get out here. And luckily, Russell Slade. Obviously, he was my manager at Brighton the year before, and he got sacked, obviously, for Gus Poyet, and he'd gone to Leyton Orient. So I knew him really well, and he kind of got me in. Leyton Orient, absolutely loved it. What a football club. Loved my time down there. Really, really good group of players. Fantastic group of players. So I went there initially on loan for about 2 or 3 months. Done really well. I think my loan was up. Got sent back to Brighton. Unfortunately, I didn't want to go back. They were flying in League One at the time. I think they went and got promoted. It was around Christmas time. Didn't really want to go back. So I wanted to stay. But the only way I could stay really is, Brighton released me on a free. Obviously, I still had 6 months remaining on my contract. And this is the really frustrating part for me in football, where I still had 6 months left in my contract. I did a deal with Brighton just because I wanted to get out of there. I wanted to go and play football. I didn't want to be one of those footballers who just sat on my contract, not playing, get to the end of the season. We'll see from there. I just wasn't one of those people. I needed it to be somewhere where I felt a part of, and I weren't a part of Brighton. So there's no point in me being there. I wanted to just get out, and they gave me, nowhere near what I should have got really from them. And the thing that frustrated me at the time, the chief exec at the time, I can't remember who it was now, he even told me, because I didn't kick up a fuss, I'd just go in, train, do my job, what I'm supposed to do. That they didn't mind having me there. So they didn't, I weren't a bother to them. I could just train for them to the end of the season. And off I went. Whereas other players who were maybe disruptive, bad eggs, as so you were, they wanted to get them out the door and they paid them off handsomely and see you later. Whereas me, I left, with nowhere near the amount of money I should have got. And then I went to Leyton Orient. I just wanted to go and play football, wanted to go back to Leyton Orient. And I was playing on next to nothing, as in I they could give me about £100-150 a week, I think it was, for a League One footballer. That is literally I think scholars probably get paid more than that now. But I just wanted to play, and so then I was living in a hotel. I had to move out of the hotel. I had to get a place down there, and obviously in and around London, it's like ridiculous for on top of a garage basically. So, I was actually losing. I actually lost money going from Brighton to Leyton Orient. And that probably affected me later on in my career or when I retired. But at the time, I just wanted to play football, and it was probably one of my best 6 months I've had as a professional footballer. Just loved every minute of it. The team, the sort of the people, the players around it. We had a good group of players. We had Harry Kane, obviously, and Tom Carroll come from Tottenham. Who were fantastic. They're only 17, 18 years old. Were fantastic. We had a really good young and old squad. The lads were brilliant. The coaching staff, Russell and Kev Nugent and Kev Dearden were brilliant. Lindsay at the back, the kit man, everyone were just, I just really, really enjoyed my time down there. I think Barry Hearn, Eddie Hearn were kind of in and around it. That we used to use their swimming pool at their sort of boxing HQ on a Sunday or whenever we needed to. We finished just outside the playoffs, had some great games. We got to the fifth round of the FA Cup against Arsenal. We beat Norwich away from home, who were in the Championship. We beat Swansea away from home, who were in the Championship. And then we played Arsenal at home in the fifth round of the FA Cup. Obviously, Jonathan Tahu, he's fantastic finish in the 90-odd minute. To get us a draw, and I went to play at the Emirates. I think the game at the Emirates was in between their games with Barcelona, and you needed tickets to go and watch them games. So it was a full house. It was 60,000. We had 9,000 Leyton Orient fans.
You know what, Andy, just to stop you there, I was actually there at that game.
Yeah.
Because I'm a massive Arsenal fan, and for my pains. And of course, Leyton Orient was always my second team, and it was always my dream to see the two of them play each other in a competitive game of football. And of course, I think the last time that had happened was 1978 FA Cup semi-final. And then, of course, it happened. And I got that opportunity, me, my brother, my dad, to take my dad to the Emirates, which he weren't too best pleased that, I'll be honest, because he was an avid Orient fan. But we were sitting there watching that. And I think the only disappointment, you know, in that game was Nicholas Bentner scored 3 goals. I mean, how that happened, I never know to this day.
We played better. Funny enough, we lost 5-0 in that game, but we actually played a lot better in that game at the Emirates than we did at home. You know, we're quite nervous at home. I thought we hung on a little bit and nicked a goal late on. Whereas the Emirates, I think we were second. It's a stupid stat. We were second to Barcelona that year of how many passes we made at the Emirates. So it just shows how much of the ball we had, how well we actually played. You know, the scoreline reflects something different, but you know, really, I've just felt we done really well in that game. And it was just a fantastic evening. You know, my family come down for it, friends and whatever. It was just 9,000 Latin Orient fans, you know, didn't care about the score. It was just the whole evening was brilliant for us.
That's my prize possession. That is my half and half scarf.
I don't know how much you'd get for that, probably now, mate. But
who cares? For me, it's priceless.
it was just a great day. We finished just outside the playoffs, and then at the end of the season, you know, I was desperate to stay. I really wanted to stay, but Russell Slade. Me and my wife had just had a baby sort of at the end of the season, sort of the April time. Obviously, she was still living in Birmingham at the time. And then, you know, we'd have made it work. I wanted to stay. And then Russell Slade put an offer on the table. I was like, you want me to live in London with that? You know, because I was only on 150 quid at the time. And unfortunately, I just couldn't. Make it work. Obviously, I was in some rented accommodation for a few months, which had run out, and I got an offer from Oxford United that where I could live at home. I could live back in Birmingham and travel in every day, and it wasn't feasible for me to carry on at Latin Orient. He kept pretty much the same team, and they were so unlucky the next season not to get promoted into the Championship. Literally, absolutely devastated that next season to see. That final play out, you know, because he's such a great football club. There's some really good people down there. Still some really good people. I hadn't spoke to anyone for a few years. And 2015, so that was about 2011 I left. 2015, Villa in the FA Cup final. You know, and I get a phone call out of the blue. The kit man, Aidy the kit man, gave me a call and said, I know I haven't spoken to you for a few years, but I know you're a big Villa fan. I've got 3 tickets for you in the Villa end. You know, that just shows the type of people at that football club. It's just a top, great place to be. You know, I'd love to go back there one day, Russell Slade, and work with him again one day at Leighton Orient. But yeah, it's a fantastic football club. And unfortunately, because of obviously having a baby and, you know, the money they were kind of offering, I had to move on, and I could live at home and play for Oxford United at the same time. And, you know, fortunately, that was a really fantastic club as well. And I spent 7 or 8 years there as well, which was great.
So, I mean, as you say, you moved to Oxford and you know, you spent, as you said, the seasons there. But, I mean, once you finished at Oxford, yeah, I said, the question I've got about Oxford is why is there no stand at one end of that ground? Well, is there an actual reason? Because it's always weird whenever you see it on the TV that there's like a car park at the back of one of the stands.
I think, you know, the sort of, so obviously he used to own Oxford United, so Kassam, that's why obviously he still owns the ground. He owns the car park, owns the sort of, there's a bowling green and a cinema and stuff just off the car park. And I think he just ran out of money basically and couldn't complete the stadium. So it was left and put a fence up for it, which is unfortunate. And for Oxford United, they will never really move on. Sven have done fantastically well the last couple of years, obviously got promoted from the National League into League Two. Now they're, you know, Mark Clapperton got them into League One. They're in and around the playoffs at the minute, lost out in the playoffs last season. They've done magnificent, last few years, but they can never, they'll never truly move on, or the fans will never really feel that stadium's their own. You know, they want their own stadium. It's still owned by, you know, the previous owner. There's always been haggling all over the last few years about the ground and all that sort of stuff. So for Oxford United to move on in football, I think they need to, and hopefully I think that's coming soon, where they get a new ground and that, you know, fans then can start feel like it's their home a little bit and not just somewhere where they're renting, which they pretty much are at the moment. So hopefully, you know, they can move on. But I think that's a story. I don't just think he just ran out of money and just couldn't complete the stadium.
It's funny, it almost seems like Oxford City have got the better stadium, better stadium and infrastructure around it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you know, Oxford City have got like two or three feet, 3Gs out now. They've got the one on the stand. They've got obviously the one in this great little setup there. They've done really, really well for themselves. And I think Oxford United use their facilities as well. You know, Oxford United have only just got their own kind of training ground. So they've been battling for years to get their own training ground. You know, they still haven't got their own ground. So they need to obviously, you know, better their infrastructure if they want to move on, you know, in the footballing world. And, you know, they're aiming to get into the Championship. I think they need to do all that. You know, but Oxford City have built a really, really good football club there. And, you know, they probably bring a lot of money in from them resources of the multiple, because they're always used as well. They're multiple 3Gs. Yeah.
How did you get into coaching then, first of all?
So I played for 4 years at Oxford United. I had a lot of injuries. I had 7 or 8 operations on my hips, groins. You know, there was one stage where I went for another sort of scan, MRI scan, and I just like pressed the button. I said, I'm done. I'm fed up of this kind of thing. You know, taking tablets for games and whatever just to get through. I'd kind of had enough of that, really. You know, I would have still played. I still wanted to play. Michael Appleton come to me sort of at the end. You know, my contract was up in the summer, about 2 months before the end of the season. Came to me and just said, look, you know, we're medically, I don't think we can offer you a contract at the end of the season. You know, I doubt you'd probably get anywhere else, you know, with your sort of recent history with injuries and operations and stuff. He said, one thing you did say, he said, but I really want to keep you around. Keep you in and around the football club, because, you know, he wants that type of person around, which is great. So come the end of the season, you know, fortunately enough, the sort of 18s job came about, the youth team coach under 18. So, you know, I kind of gone from playing, stayed at the football club and sort of coaching their under 18s. I hadn't really thought about it, to be perfectly honest. You know, I was just so solely focused on trying to get another year in playing, keep getting another year in playing. I didn't really think about, you know, what I was going to do after. Luckily enough, Michael Appleton was brilliant. He kept me on. And, I went into under 18s coaching, did that, got me sort of badges, my UEFA B in that summer, got me my A licence a year or two later. Really enjoyed it. Probably after about a couple of years, I started getting a little bit probably itchy feet. You know, obviously a lot of players who I played with had left, you know, so it was like a new feel to the place. You know, a lot of new players, like big players like Kemar Roof, Lundstroms, who are now doing brilliant things for Rangers. They were coming into the team. I didn't really feel that connection with the first team there a lot. I just thought it was the right time for me to leave, so I left. Colin Gordon at Kidderminster, so I played with John Eustace at Coventry City. You know, when I broke through, he was the manager at Kidderminster. You know, they were starting his 20, like an under-23s. And Eustace wanted me in around the first team as well. So I wanted to kind of get back into that first team environment. They were full-time. I was doing the 23s for Kiddie. And then obviously when first team games, I'd be sort of with the coaching staff basically. And that was a great experience, looking, watching John Eustace close up, as I had done with Michael Appleton in you know, at Oxford. Then I went into really getting to see what John Eustace has done from day to day, matches, all that sort of stuff. That was a great experience for me. But this, I think I'd had 2 years, because I was still in the Oxford United bubble. I never really, and I would say grief, like, obviously, no, I lost anybody or anything, but like when I retired, you know, because I went straight into that job, I didn't really have time to think about it. And around this time, sort of Kidderminster time, where I went, it was like 23's first team coach. I had a bit of a wobble, really. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Am I chasing things? You know, I just found it really difficult to come to terms with. I've retired now. I've got to do something else. You know, obviously having more kids, stresses at home came a little bit more. And it was a really tough time. So then I was only there for about 7 or 8 months. Even though I enjoyed it, I, for some reason, got itchy feet. Coventry City wanted an under-18s coach. And I just thought, a little bit like Oxford United, where, you know, I played there. You know, it was great. Every time I went to the ground, it was, you know, all the fans were great to me. I just thought, you know, me scoring the last goal at Highfield Road, been there as an academy player, going back to Coventry City, the red carpet's going to be rolled out. You know, this is going to be brilliant. I can enjoy it. And it didn't really materialise, really. I didn't really enjoy it at all, going back to Coventry City. I wish I hadn't have gone back. Mm. You know, I had great feelings of the football club. You know, when I played, I come through the academy, I come into the first team, played in that era, it was great. And then I've gone back a few years ago, it's a completely different football club. Like I said earlier, we lived at the training ground. We're on top of the first team players. We've seen what the first team players did. It was brilliant, a great grounding for us. The academy are now separate to the first team. So the first team are kind of closed off. The academy players are like in their own little bubble, and they quite liked it. Where I, for me, you know, they didn't, these under 18 and 16, 17 year olds didn't grasp what it took to be a professional footballer, because they didn't know, they couldn't see them day in, day out. And they very rarely got to go and train or see the first team players up close and personal. So they were left at their own devices, really. And they didn't get that grounding. Jobs weren't, you know, it weren't the same jobs and chores we had to do. You know, you're not allowed to do that anymore. You can't, like, my coaches are really aggressive and forthright. And, you know, you had to go on your toes for everything. Whereas, you know, where I was in nowadays, you have to be careful what you say. There's a certain type of coaching.
I'm still old school, I'm afraid. Absolutely.
You know, a certain, they want to bring a certain type of player into the football club. They want to bring you a certain type of playing. And I just couldn't get, I'll hold my hands at the time. I just couldn't get my head around. It just wasn't what I was about. I couldn't just fall into some, you know, like just be a yes man and do what people wanted me to do and just go through that day to day. I gave my opinion, and sometimes I wanted that opinion to be taken in. And it never was. It was kind of batted away. This is how I hate that saying. This is what we've always done. We'll keep doing this. You know, that they got some good players, like really good players through the system, James Madison's and you know, players like that, you know, fantastic. But, you know, you have to keep evolving. For me at the time, you know, I didn't see it, you know, because it was separate as well. Whenever I went back to the first team training ground, before, you know, when you get that feel of a football club where people are saying hello to you, you know, that time, you know, I went back and no one had said a word. It felt alien to me. Whereas 15 years ago, you know, it was such a vibrant, happy place, what I can remember anyway. And it's gone. It just wasn't the same place. Maybe that's me, because obviously what we had back then was completely different to what it is now. You know, I just didn't get that same feeling. I thought I was going to get going back. And you know, I thought then that I needed to get back into sort of first team football, first team environment where.
So, Andy, I mean, according to this then, I'm sort of wrapping up and time's flying by on us. But, I mean, you know, you moved in then from, you know, went to sort of Kidderminster and was the under-23s coach there at Kidderminster. Then with your old mate Russell Slade again at in National League North Club Hereford, but I mean, bring it right up to date, and of course with Banbury. And I mean, how did the Banbury job, you know, first come about? And you know, and I'm hoping it's probably going to be that situation where it's above your wildest dreams of where you've got to this season, and promotion into the National League next year.
Yeah, I went to Hereford, Russell Slade, brilliant. Didn't work out there, you know. The club weren't, you know, as in board level, wasn't great. And we kind of we left there. But I learned so much from there. And last 4 or 5 years, I've probably been applying for jobs, manager's jobs, hoping to get somewhere. But I was never ready. And then Tim Harris, I think one day during COVID or just after sort of the main bit of COVID, Banbury United jobs up. Do you fancy it? Why don't you put your CV in for that? I was like, yeah, well, you know, obviously with my Oxford United links, it's Oxfordshire. You know, that could be a really good one just to get my foot in the door and get in there, really. Applied for the job, had a few sort of interviews over the phone with board members and whatever. And then thankfully I was offered the job. You know, even yesterday I read some comments about a lot of fans were underwhelmed at the time getting me in there because I wasn't approving. I literally seen these comments yesterday, they popped up somewhere. You know, which is fine. I get that. Unproven manager, yeah, I get that. You know, you gotta get your experience somewhere. Under 18s managers get League One clubs, they go from 18s to straight to you know, I don't, sometimes I have to cop out really, this the experience one, but I felt I was ready. It was kind of in that season, obviously curtailed. This was in May of 2020, I think it was 2020. So COVID had just kind of, you know, we'd been in lockdown. We're just coming out of lockdown. We didn't really know when the season was going to start. I couldn't really get into the club. I couldn't really meet players, which was frustrating. Then we could kind of go into pre-season, but like dribs and drabs. So I kind of had like meetings with players then. Obviously, I didn't really know the players. I know a few who had worked with at Oxford United and stuff. So it was just trying to see what I had in the building, really, and trying to like feel my way into sort of the management world, because yes, I was an unproven manager. I hadn't had that experience. I'd seen a lot of it from afar, but I weren't really in the thick of it and speaking to players and all that sort of stuff, bringing staff in and whatever else. So that first season was brilliant for me in terms of, yes, it got cut short with COVID. We played 13 games, but it gave me a sense of, I knew the league. I started to know the league. Then I knew the players, what I thought I needed. Even in terms of backroom staff, I remember once I was taking a training session, there's about 4 or 5 of them chatting behind me, you know, just chatting, there's balls flying everywhere and I haven't got a ball because I'm in the session and these are chatting behind me and just little things like that. I was constantly sort of trying to improve things all the time. The first season, bringing in players was literally like throw a net out, hopefully we catch a few and bring those type of players in, because it was like free for all. There was league starting 3 or 4 weeks after another league, so you know they were trialing elsewhere because they were hanging on to that when we'd already started our league, and it was a mismatch for season. Even then we still managed to reach the first round of the FA Cup for the first time in 50 years, which was unbelievable achievement you know, for us. So we still managed to do that, but then through COVID then we had a lot of Zoom meetings like this and discussed, because you know we get this just because we're top of the league and we're 20 points clear or 19 points clear. Everyone thinks we've got loads of money and we're throwing money at. We've probably got a budget that is probably, I'd say, mid-table budget. If you look at our budget now, there's loads of teams higher budget than us. But what we knew that before the start of the season, we knew we weren't going to have the highest budget. But how can we sort of bridge the gap? You know, so recruitment had to be right. The type of players I wanted, young, fit, hungry players who wanted to go into the next level, wanting to improve. The staff had to be the same. They had to buy into it. So we had 3 or 4 new members of staff, fitness coach, new physio, sort of new assistant manager, all bought into the same philosophy. Budgets, you know, I was like a salesman sort of last summer in terms of trying to sell the project, really, because I knew these players could go to another club and be third or fourth choice striker on more money. Or so I had to be really clever in sort of, you know, this is what I think we're going to do. And we just finished 17th in the league. Obviously, it was Qatar, and we only played 7 games. So it was, you know, they had to see this kind of vision. Obviously, you get lucky with certain individuals as well. We bought a player in on 50 quid a week 3 days before the start of the season because he had nowhere. He turned out to be absolutely unbelievable, and he's one of our, you know, best players now. You know, little things like that. So you have to have a little bit of luck along the way, but our recruitment and our what we do behind the scenes, we've got, you know, a sort of mid-table to probably top half budget, I'd say top 8 maybe. You know, but the little things you do, we sort of have pre-match at hotel, which isn't really expensive if you look at it. So we get the players in 3 or 4 hours before the game, and even little things like that. Training's different. We stay after training, we eat or whatever, beans on toast or cereals or whatever. But at least they, you know, the players are chatting. They're a really good group. We've managed to kind of have a consistent team over the last year. You know, if there's injuries or suspensions, we've kind of, our fitness coach who retired 5 years ago, he's played 3 or 4 games, you know, just because we've had to. We've been real, really tight knit. Players we've bought in, a couple of loan players here and there, but we've kept a kind of consistent squad together. And it's been an unbelievable season to get to the first round of the FA Cup again, to play Barrow in front of 2,500 fans on ITV. A great achievement again. And then to go on and be champions with 4 or 5 games to go, still 19 points clear with 3 games to go, is an unbelievable achievement. One, probably the club would never have thought that we would be at this stage. You know, we've got that mentality, that step 2 mentality. We said that at the start of the season, let's like act as if we are a step 2 club, and we've done that. And then, you know, we've got, you know, obviously even more so now, it's, you know, because I think there's a bigger jump from where we are now to the sort of National League North or South. It's quite a big jump. You know, the club have to go again, and we have to see how can we improve things without kind of breaking the bank, so to speak. So, you know, it's been a great journey. You know, it's only the start, really. Hopefully the club have now got to sort of stabilise, you know, in step 2. And, you know, we're really excited about it.
I bet you're hoping that Brackley don't get promoted, aren't you, for the big derby next season.
yeah, absolutely. You know, it'd be great for us. You know, they're obviously doing really, really well. You know, they've been sort of nearly there, haven't they? The last 4 or 5 seasons have been losing in playoffs. They've been top of the league and just falling short every year. But they've been great, been pretty relentless so far this season. So, you know, a selfish point of view, it's a local one. You know, there's Gateshead, I think there's the other one, which is quite a long way away from Banbury. So, yeah, local derby against Brackley would be fantastic. You know, we'll see how they get on at the end of the season. But, you know, the club and the community, the town is so excited. You know, you see where the numbers were getting at, you know, 1,800 the other week.
It's Tamworth, yeah.
On Monday, we should probably get near 2,000, probably plus. So, yeah, it's really exciting times for the football club. And, you know, but it's exciting, but there's so much hard work to try and stay in that league next season. I've been to watch games already, and it's a real, real relentless sort of 100-mile-an-hour league. You know, we want to try and keep as much as a squad as possible. We know they're going to get offers from elsewhere, you know, and want to try and progress their careers, which is fine. But we want to try and keep as many as those, if not all of them, together, and obviously add 3 or 4. But it's going to be a tough few months for us, but we're looking forward to anyway. I certainly am anyway.
Well, listen, Andy, I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. It really has. I mean, I've just looked over there and it's a wow. We've been talking for an hour and 20 minutes.
I can talk now. I do apologise.
No, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been an honour to have you on as well, mate, as well. And we wish you and Banbury all the very, very best for the rest of this season and continue your run. And of course, into next year as well. And we hope that you have a great season next year. We wish you and family as well all the best as well. And and a massive thank you for joining me and Steve today. I've really learned a lot and really enjoyed the chat, and hopefully we'll get to see you at the award ceremony on the 11th of June and in person. But from me and Steve on this chat with, of course, Andy, we'd say massive thank you for watching. And we'll be back with our next chat. And our next chat should be Mr. Mark Morsley, ex Needham Market and Leeston manager as well next week. So until then, massive thanks for watching. And from me and Steve and from Andy, good night.